It took God 7 days to create the earth. We will cleanse it in 3. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today I am here to celebrate the 1 year anniversary of this show. We have gone around the sun together, folks. And to celebrate this momentous occasion, I am here to once again review the most downloaded episode of 2024, Three the Hard Way, starring Jim Brown, Fred the Hammer Williamson, and Jim Kelly. So for those of you dropping in for the very first time, welcome. How you doing? Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. But you may be thinking, what else could you possibly say, Brandon, about Three the Hard Way? Well, I'm glad you asked, because I thought about that myself and then realized that there is plenty of things that I did not talk about in my last review. The last time I talked about this show was back in November, and I really focused on the heroes of this movie. Jim Brown, the greatest football player of all time. Fred the Hammer Williamson, who I had just met a few weeks prior to the release of this episode. That's why I even decided to review this movie in the first place. It was because I had just met him at an autograph signing. And of course, the karate tournament champ himself, Jim Kelly, all teaming up together for, I think this was their first time. All three of them teamed up together, I think, in 4 different movies. One Down, Two to Go is like the direct sequel. But between them and the actual like storyline of this movie, that was basically the focus of last year's review. And truly a sleeper hit. I did not anticipate the sheer amount of downloads that came from the review of that movie. I like this movie. It is my favorite blaxploitation film to date, and was the first one that I reviewed here on the show. But I did not even remotely anticipate, when I saw the downloads numbers when the episode after the opening weekend, I was like, this is quite surprising. How interested. We'll see if lightning hits twice here, lightning strikes twice here with this second review. But with the amount of attention that I gave to the heroes of this film, I thought maybe this time I would spend some time talking about some of the other additional features to this film that are important, like the director. So let's start with our director of this movie, Gordon Parks Jr. Gordon Parks Jr. was a director responsible not only for Three the Hard Way, but also for the movie Superfly. He only did a handful of films. Three the Hard Way and Superfly are the two most notable ones. In Superfly, a cocaine dealer is looking to get out of the world of the organized drug dealing crime syndicate thing. But sadly, Gordon Parks Jr.'s career was cut short at the age of, I think it's like early 40s, maybe, and at the age of like 44, I think, when him and a few additional passengers died in a plane crash in Kenya while they were on set filming a new film, working on a new film. That was in 1979. Three the Hard Way had come out in 1974. Not that the tragedy isn't hard as it is, but because of that, we also were never able to get the team up of Gordon Parks Jr. with Gordon Parks Sr. In case you don't know who Gordon Parks Sr. is, strap yourself in, because this is a man that you should know. Gordon Parks Sr. Started to become known throughout the 40s and 60s for his work in photography, chronicling the life of the American in the 1940s during World War II, and capturing the life of poverty of American of African Americans and also the civil rights movement through photography. Eventually, he would transition into directing, writing, and musical scores. He did basically everything but acting when he got into the film industry. His breakout film, The Learning Tree, came out in 1969. It was a semi-autobiographical film about his life, but you are probably familiar with Gordon Parks Sr. because of his follow-up film, Shaft, and also its sequel, Shaft's Big Score, which he also did the music for. Yes, Gordon Parks Sr. is responsible for what is arguably the biggest blaxploitation film of all time, or at least the one with the biggest crossover appeal. And shame on me for a moment because I left out a small detail about The Learning Tree. Not only is this an autobiographical film about the life of Gordon Parks Sr., but with him as the director of the movie, that marked the first time that an African American was directing a film for a major film studio, Warner Brothers. He would then also go on to direct one of the most well-known blaxploitation films of all time. And sadly, we were never able to get a team up between the Parks, the Gordon Parks, for a film where maybe Junior directs and Senior does the music or wrote it or something. But Gordon Parks Sr. did a little bit of everything, if I'm being honest, in the arts, you could say, between his work in the film industry, his photography. He wrote poetry. He wrote a ballet about Martin Luther King Jr. Like, he was a very artistic individual. So yeah, both men, sadly, again, because of the plane crash, you know, we only got so much of Gordon Parks Jr., but both men are definitely people that you need to know if you're going to spend any time in the blaxploitation genre. And not only the blaxploitation genre, but also just, you know, film history as a whole, particularly with Gordon Parks Sr. Now, one of the early plot points in the film, Three the Hard Way, is that Jim Brown, the greatest football player of all time, is playing a record label producer. He's a producer for a record label, and he is working on a track with a group called The Impressions. And that was someone else that I didn't talk about the last time. So let's talk a little bit now about The Impressions. I thought maybe when I first watched this movie that this group that Jim Brown was working with was just another group, just somebody who they just had on hand for what is a very small scene, and they did the like main song for the movie. Turns out I was absolutely wrong about who the Impressions are. The Impressions are considered one of the pioneers of R&B. They got started in the 1960s, so they had been around for about 10 years prior to the release of Three the Hard Way. They took a lot of influence from gospel music in their writing, and they had kind of a gospel, soul, doo-wop, R&B sound. They toured, like I said, they started right around the 1960s, and they finally disbanded in 2018. They were one of the longest running performers out there. It was like some almost 60 years out performing, and they had a lot of different band members, sure. I mean, that happens to a lot of groups that are touring for a long period of time. Look at the Beach Boys, for example, or maybe not. Don't look at the Beach Boys. With Mike Loving in charge of it, don't look at the Beach Boys. But not only are they one of the longest running groups, they are the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees, Grammy Hall of Fame inductees, and are most well known for their song People Get Ready. That was one of their biggest chart-topping tracks. So Good to know that there's probably plenty of music out there. Maybe next time I go to a record store, I will be honest, that kind of category of music is not really my thing, not really my style, other than Usher's Yeah. Like, I don't really... Is that Usher? That's Usher, right? Yes, other than Usher's Yeah, which is one of those songs that can summon an entire generation, there's R&B was just never really... has never really been my thing. But you know what? Maybe next time I hit up the record store, I'll go over there and I'll just see. And if I find any of the impressions, I'll pick it up, start expanding my listening a little bit. What do I listen to on vinyl? And I'm glad you asked, because everybody wants to know what a pretentious white man is listening to on vinyl. A lot of pop punk. I like my Billy Joel on vinyl. I really like Bobby Darin. He's my crooner swinger guy of choice, and quite a bit 60s pop. So the Monkees in particular, some Beatles, Beach Boys. And then my wife is working on getting all the Taylor Swift vinyls, or all the Taylor Swift projects on vinyl. And I think she has a Panic at the Disco. She's got Death of a Bachelor as well. So someday I'm looking forward to the day when I can buy my son his first vinyl. But back to Kung Fu movies and combat, that you're not here for music. If you are, though, you should go listen to Some Joyful Noise, which is also a show here on the Anazao Ministries Podcast Network. Free plug. So that is some of the historical things about Three of the Hard Way that got left off the last review, and I'm glad that I spent some time digging into those things, because I didn't know all that about Gordon Parks Jr. and Sr., and I definitely didn't know that the impressions were a big deal. So, you know, learning and growing. This isn't the first time I've watched this movie. Watching this movie for the first time I reviewed it wasn't the first time I watched this movie. So still just learning and growing. Now, if you have not seen this movie, I'm sorry to say that I don't know where you can stream it, because I just own a copy of it. That's how much I like this movie. But because, again, if you're new around here, I don't really do star ratings or anything like that. If you're interested in that, check out the show has a page on has a profile on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza PRTY, if you're into more of like the detailed five-star review kind of thing. But I measure it more off of would I watch it again, and would I buy a physical media copy of it? And I would, and I do, and I have it. I've had it for a while now. But one thing that this go around, as I'm kind of like sitting with the movie, watching it again, like I said last time, I spent a lot of time focusing on the heroes, because they're just so dang cool. They are cool heroes. That is one reason why I like blaxploitation films. I just find the leading men and women to be so dang cool. But this time, I wanted to take a moment to think about the bad guys. So if you haven't seen the movie, the bad guys is a neo-Nazi group, and they have this plan where they have contrived some kind of special chemical that they're going to put into the water supplies in Detroit, LA, and DC that will specifically only kill African Americans. There's something about this chemical that they're going to poison the water supply with that will only kill black people. And obviously Jim Brown, Fred the Hammer Williamson, and Jim Kelly kind of stumble into this plot. Jim Brown initially is the one who kind of stumbles into this plot, and they end up, you know, saving the day. They stop this genocide from taking place. And I don't really want to put myself in the mindset of a white supremacist. That doesn't sound like a good time to me, if you ask me personally. But I did a little bit for this film. The bad guys are comically bad. You know, like, it's just, it is a, I would say, as a non-white supremacists a stereotypical depiction of white people. But it probably, the shoe does fit, given who they are trying to, like, depict here. It is far better than in Black Belt Jones, the mafia, who are the bad guys in that movie. They are just very stereotypical. It's a me, it's a me, Mario. Just, like, very stereotypical. Like, one of them goes, Mamma Mia, at one point. Like, it is very stereotypical comedic, like, Italian portrayal there. But with this movie and its antagonist being this white supremacist neo-Nazi group, which are all things that we are still dealing with today, sadly, you know, this form of, like, racism, of, like, genocide white supremacy is very easy to be seen as the bad guy by a lot of the rest of us who aren't white supremacists. But I just wanted to sit in it for a moment when I rewatched the film this time, because something that never really stood out to me any other time I had watched this was the fact that this was being treated, this potential genocide of African Americans in three major cities, this was being treated by the bad guys as a major good historical event. That quote that I opened today's show with, that is something that the bad guy says at one point, that God created the world in 7 days, we will cleanse it in three. And it's very much, when he said the line, it stuck with me. It kind of reminded me a little bit, as we are nearing spooky season, of Dr. Frankenstein, the famous line that they had to censor out of the original Frankenstein movie of, now I know what it feels like to dabble in God's domain or whatever. Of just, like, there's a little bit of a, I probably even shouldn't say a little bit, there's, like, a God complex, not necessarily a Messiah complex there, maybe a little bit for fellow white supremacists, but, like, there's a God complex there of, like, I am dabbling in God's domain. He created everything, but I am going to cleanse it in a shorter amount of time than it took him to create everything. That, my friend, is some brass cojones to think that you can do something like that. And it just, like, all the conversations that the main bad guy has with, like, his mad scientist guy who's like come up with this chemical, is that they have this back and forth at one point where the scientist is like, you brought me in because you wanted to do something historical, something that history books would retell for generations. You're not going to let some guy, honestly, in the dialogue of the movie, he probably said savage. That is, like, a word that the bad guys use frequently, along with another one that I'm not allowed to say. But they use the word savage a lot to describe African Americans. You're not going to let, like, some savage keep you from, you know, doing this historical act. And again, the idea that this historical act is horrible is not even remotely what any of this means. It is historically being seen by the bad guys as this historically good thing. This is a bad thing that we have to remove, and we have figured out the way to do it. And it's just fascinating to, again, I didn't want to spend a lot of time trying to put myself in this mind frame, because obviously I don't agree with it whatsoever. But it's just kind of fascinating to think about, like, there are people who legitimately see something like this as the greater good. You know, it is a righteous thing in their mind to commit genocide against people. Not not just purely, like, I think maybe, like, a lot of the henchmen in Three the Hard Way are more of the stereotypical backwood hicks neo-Nazi kind of people that you would maybe think of. Like, it's a little bit more the henchmen, the grunt guys, they're a little bit more stereotypical. Whereas the main bad guy and his, like, second in command, the scientist, is this very, like, prim and proper, like, obviously to have some kind of mentality like this, you have to have a lot of hate in your heart, but they're not, like, fueled with rage like you may see in clips of protests nowadays. They're very, like, pip pip cheerio, like, just very, like, prim and proper, collected, put together, not necessarily, like, yeah, there's, like, this kind of Nazi-looking flag sitting behind him, but there's not anything in appearance that would necessarily make you think, oh, that guy's a flaming racist. What do you know? And my time's starting to run out, so I need to wrap this up, because obviously I'm going somewhere with all of this. But it's just... So I think that was another factor of, like, it's not like that, I guess racists come in all shapes and sizes. I don't know. I don't know if that's the moral, but maybe partially. But there's just something about that portrayal of the bad guy, of not being just like a purely hate-driven individual, but someone who's just like positionally elevated. Maybe that's what it is. It's like the bad guy isn't like this rage, I just hate black people, as much as he is in his mind, black people are beneath him. There's a pride element. There is a element of, I am better than everyone else. And these people are such a scourge on society. We need to eliminate them, period. And obviously, all of this ties in greatly to current real-world events of the issues going on in Israel and Palestine. And yeah, nobody is listening to Kung Fu Pizza Party to get my take on geopolitics, because that is a complicated thing that even I am not well-versed enough to really weigh in on, other than genocide is bad. Israel should not be allowed to starve Palestinians to death. They should not be allowed to bomb hospitals and then re-bomb them to make sure it's caught by the local news. Like, I'm not trying to say his name incorrectly. I've just have never been able to say his name incorrectly. With Netanyahu, it's kind of this, like, a little bit of both. Honestly, it is that hate-driven racism, but it is also that, like, pride ego racism of, we're just better and we're just going to take what is ours. And that's just wrong. And nobody, again, nobody's really looking to me for the solution, because I don't really have the solution in the first place, other than just making it clear that I don't support what Israel is doing, and I think people shouldn't be. And maybe for some of you listening, because I'm not gonna, I know Kung Fu Pizza Party's on a Christian podcast network, and so I know that there's a lot of listeners out there who are Christians who may agree with me, but there's also plenty of people out there who have come across this show because they like Kung Fu movie, martial art media, and so they get this chance to just hear me geek out about stuff, and that's fine. And maybe for those of you in that group, me saying, hey, we shouldn't be supporting Israel is, like, not that shocking. Like, that's not that, yeah, should not be something that needs to be said. But in the Christian community, and not all Christians think this way, but in the Christian community, basically, Israel's allowed to do whatever they want in a lot of those people's minds. Like, it is their God-given right to destroy the Palestinians. And that's not only evil, that's completely misunderstanding what the Bible has to say about Israel and the kingdom of God as it is now under Jesus. And yeah, somehow I got here while talking about a movie starring the greatest football player of all time, Jim Brown, and Fred the Hammer Williamson, native of Gary, Indiana, and Jim Kelly, who every time I watch Jim Kelly fight, gets so much better for me. I love watching Jim Kelly fight now. I don't know what it is. But yeah, happy 1 year anniversary. Talked a lot about genocide and racism on this episode for the 1 year anniversary. Maybe something more cheery next time. I don't know. We have a whole year to get look forward to it. But thank you all for listening. I plugged a few things already in this episode. So along with those things, make sure you check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, A Place for Faith and Pop Culture. Also, check out the Kung Fu Pizza Party Instagram, at Kung Fu Pizza Party. Share this episode with a friend, preferably somebody who is a racist, who needs to know that Israel shouldn't be allowed to bomb Palestinians. Or just anybody. You could also just give it to anybody. And if you haven't yet already, please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you disagree with me about Israel, please don't review bomb me. And I think that's it. Thank you again for listening, and more importantly, thank you for being a part of this show for the past year now. I'm looking forward to what's right around the corner here, which is spooky season, but also all the other fun ideas and reviews that I have planned coming up, and some new guests in year two. But until next time, this has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I've delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one slice at a time.